There is no such thing as initiative. You cannot do anything that has not been done a million times before, because there is this eternal recurrence, eternal recurrence, eternal recurrence. There is no point for the individual to make a specific effort. His real function is to obey the laws of the universe as communicated to him by his society. And if he can't do that, he becomes a nothing and just disintegrates. The castes are compared to the limbs of a body, the Brahmin caste, the head, the Kshatriya or governing caste, the shoulders and arms, the Vaishya or third estate, the wealthy caste, the torso, and the serving caste, the Shudra, the legs. Now what would happen to a body if the feet said, I want to be the head, or the head said, I want to be the heart, or, you know, what do we call that when it happens in a body? We call it cancer. And so what we call democracy is, from this standpoint, cancer. There is, however, a very special occasion when the caste differentiations can be transcended, and that is occasion of certain kind of worship. When one goes past caste, that means in one's mind one has gone past the realm of Maya altogether and united oneself with the transcendent power. Now let me speak very briefly, and I want to do this, brief though it must be, as a kind of preparation for the slides for next week, the historical evidence we have for the development of these ideas in India. First, the Indus Valley civilization. Two considerable cities, very much like the cities in Crete, geometrically laid out, appear in India about 2500 BC. Obviously, implantations. They did not grow there. They were brought in from the Iranian plateau, and obviously also for the exploitation of a very rich land, a land very rich in natural resources. Within these cities, and they were pretty darned materialistic. They're just laid out in a very mechanical way. There's very little art. There are a few tiny little images in contrast to the magnificent art of contemporary Egypt, Mesopotamia, and Crete. This is rather slight. A few little images, but most important, a number of seals, about an inch and a half square for sealing documents. And it's on these seals that certain little bas-reliefs tell us of the imagery of this period. The most conspicuous figure on these seals is the bull, the same bull that you see walking around the streets of Calcutta today. It is that sacred bull who is the consort of the goddess Cow. This is the goddess, and this is the bull whom we know from India, from Egypt, from Mesopotamia, and from Crete. This is the bull that in Egypt is identified with Osiris, the god who dies and is resurrected, the Apis bull, who represents that energy of life, that divine procreative energy of life that brings forth forms. The horns of the bull, I'm speaking now from the standpoint that we can arrive at through comparative study of these contemporaneous cultures, the horns of the bull are equated with the horns of the moon. And the moon is that sign in the sky of death and resurrection beyond death, the eternal recurrence. The moon remains the high symbol of the dead and resurrecting God. Even in the Christian image, Christ is 3 days in the tomb, the moon is 3 days dark, and the dating of Easter is always made in relation to the full moon. The moon can also be thought of as a cup which fills with ambrosia. In the tropical world, the sun is fierce and burning and desiccates the vegetation. The night moon sends down the dew, the ambrosia, the amrita, the drink of immortality which refreshes life. And this is equated with the vital energy of the bull, so that the bull and the moon. And the moon may be thought of as a cup. You see it fill every month and then unload its ambrosia on the earth and fill again. Furthermore, the moon sheds its shadow, just as a serpent sheds its skin. And so the serpent sloughing its skin and the moon sloughing its shadow are equivalent. We have the moon, we have the bull, we have the serpent. These are equivalent symbols. And that serpent is exactly the serpent of the Kundalini that we brought up the spine last week. Against the moon, you have the sun, which represents that fierce, burning, fiery power. And the animal equivalent to the sun is the lion, whose wonderful face is the solar face. And he pounces on the bull just as the sun does on the moon. And the bird associated with the sun is the eagle or the hawk, who pounces on the serpent as the sun pounces on the waters. These are prime images that come back and forth. Shiva has the moon in his hair, and Vishnu is shown on the serpent, but Vishnu is also shown flying on the sunbird Garuda. These are symbols that are already indicated in the ancient Indus culture. Also, there are Lingam Yoni symbols from there. Also, there is the symbol of a tree with a certain specific kind of leaf, a kind of heart-shaped or spade-shaped leaf. That is the leaf of the Bodhi tree, the tree under which the Buddha sat, which in Buddhism is called the immovable point, that center point, that hub around which the whole ever-proceeding vortex revolves.